going to hand over to you.
Great. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Again, I'm sorry we had, I guess Zoom had technical difficulties. This is the first time like this, but bear with us. I was getting phone calls I couldn't answer. I apologize. So I'm going to not waste too much time and get to our guests. Is also, I can't see the gallery view for some reason, but Julie, Lisa is here from Eastman because Lisa is going to go first, but I'm not ready yet. Okay, beautiful. So let me just give you a couple things, everybody. It's great to see so many people today. This is our largest ever. There's a couple of people who have renewed that I haven't sent thank you letters to. You'll get them this weekend. If you haven't renewed and you can, that's really appreciated. If you need 90 days, that's fine. If you need more time than that, I'm happy to grant whatever you need is in this difficult time. We've had three new members this week, so thank you to everybody who's been sharing information about the group. It's much appreciated. I did want to just say two quick things. There's an actual opening this week, and maybe it starts tonight. So if Barbara's on the call, I think she is, later, you can definitely put it in the chat and tell us about the opening after our presentations, Barbara, okay? Barbara Alper is in a group show. And then Photo LA, the lectures begins. There's some interesting lectures tomorrow if you're interested. There's one on Ann Brigman in the morning. There's one with Becky Semp from CCP about her Ansel Adams book. On Sunday, Barbara Tannenbaum from the Cleveland Museum is also talking to Ilse Bing. So without further ado, everybody knows we're gonna have two presenters. First, Lisa Hostetler from Eastman Museum, then Sean Corcoran from the Museum of the City of New York. And then they both have agreed to take question and answers, take questions and answer them. I'm sure you'll have some. And then at the end, we will do our normal breakout rooms and then do coffee chat at the very, very end. So hopefully everybody can hear and see exactly as they have in the past. And let me just give you a brief intro on Lisa. Give me 1 second. I have two things on at, here we go. So Lisa Hostetler and I have been talking for several years. She's up at Eastman, now called the Eastman Museum in Rochester, New York. If you've never been there, it's a great place to see if you're in the area. And she was going to come down for our seminar a couple years ago, but the timing didn't work out. So I'm really pleased that she's here with us today. Lisa is the curator in charge of the Department of Photography at the George Eastman Museum in Rochester, as I said. She has held previous positions as the McEvoy Family Curator of Photography at the Smithsonian American Art Museum and as curator of photographs at the Milwaukee Art Museum. She earned her PhD from Princeton University with a dissertation on photographer Louis Fair while working as a research associate at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Major exhibitions she has curated with accompanying publications are David Leventhal, War, Myth, Desire, in 2018, Eugene Richards, who's a APEG member, The Run-On of Time with April Watson, Nelson Atkins, Museum of Art 2017, A Matter of Memory, Photography as Object in the Digital Age 2016, Color Rush, American Color Photography from Stieglitz to Sherman with Kate Bussard from Princeton University Art Museum in 2013. There's several more. She has also curated several shows that were the first museum exhibitions of new bodies of work, including Tanya Marcuse, Woven 2019, and Gail Albert Haliban, Out My Window, who some of you may know. Among her current projects are James Welling, Choreograph 2020, Breaking the Rules, Six Women Fashion Photographers for 2021, and a retrospective of Nicholas Murai, if I pronounce that right, Photography that will open in 2023. So I welcome Lisa Hostetler, and depending on, she and I had agreed I was just going to basically ask questions and we would sort of do a Q&A between us to get it going. So if that that format I think works, but Lisa, if you want to say hello and say some opening words about the museum or briefly answer one or two of the questions that I had given you, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks, Mary. I'm really happy to see so many people here and some familiar faces and names and some unfamiliar. Photographers' archives is kind of a hot topic these days. So I'm glad that there's a group that's discussing it as we get more and more photographers needing to have assurance that their work is safe and accessible. The number of places who are equipped to handle that are limited. So it's an important topic, and I don't know that I have answers, but I'm happy to participate in conversations about it. The George Eastman Museum, as many of you probably already know, was founded in 1947 and opened in 1949. And has been collecting all kinds of photography since the beginning. It changed its name to the George Eastman Museum in 2015, and we sort of did a rebranding kind of campaign. We're actually, if you come when the pandemic releases us, then you'll see a brand new entrance, which is almost finished, that's actually across from the parking lot instead of all the way down. you park and then you don't know where to go in the building. But now it'll be really clear and easy, and we hope to welcome more people. I see Sean smiling because he used to work here and he knows that it is very confusing. So our collection of photographs has about 400,000 objects in it. It contains work from the very beginning, even pre-photograph days, but from daguerreotypes to contemporary works. It was founded with three large founding collections. One is the Gabriel Cromer Collection, which will be featured in an exhibition and publication that Heather Shannon is working on in 2022. But Gabriel Cromer was a French lawyer and carbon print. He was an amateur photographer who made carbon prints, but his main sort of vocation was collecting 19th century French photography, and he had in mind that it would eventually go to the French state, and they would set up a French Museum of Photography. But when he passed away, it was the lead up to World War II, and France had other things on its mind. An executive, this was late 1930s. 1939, a Kodak executive, Walter Clark, bought it, convinced Kodak that they should acquire the collection. And that way they could show how much worse photography, or how much harder photography was before the Kodak. He convinced them to acquire it, and he bought it from Mrs. Cromer, and it arrived in America in November 1939. They put it on long-term loan to the Eastman Museum when we opened in 1949, and they eventually gave it to us.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, George.
Response to Eric.
Chris, we can hear you. Can you mute, please?
Julie, you may be able to mute. Julie, you may be able to mute him yourself.
Important objects, daguerreotype of daguerreotype by, okay. Daguerreotype by Daguerre, daguerreotype of Daguerre, lots of early Salta paper prints, French, all the way through Le Gray, amazing materials. The second group was the Alden Scott Boyer Collection, which is mainly British and American photography, early photography, 19th century, and then the Lewis Walton Sibley Collection, which is American photography. And this is basically his collection that he had opened as a museum in Philadelphia in 1940. And then the 3M company acquired it when he passed away and gave it to us. So those are our founding collections, but we've been acquiring by gift and purchase since we opened. And we have within the collection archives of Nicholas Marai, Lewis Hine, Victor Kepler, Alvin Langdon Coburn, who bequeathed his photographs to the museum when he passed away. And we have basically the Aaron Siskind's documentary output, which he gave to the museum, I believe it was in the 60s or the 50s. That's sort of a rough overview. We've been collecting contemporary work as well, and always have been. So because, as you all know, the history of photography is still continuing, so we need to keep up with that. So that's a little bit about the museum. Mary, did you? Oh, you're muted.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Should I go to some of the questions or?
Should anyone else? Sorry, just a quick one. Regina says she can't hear very well. Is anyone else having trouble with the audio?
No.
No, sorry, love. It's in, on your end.
Sorry about that. I screwed up.
No worry, Chris. No worry. Lisa, so you're there?
Yes.
So I'm going to just, I gave you all these questions, but I'm going to jump right to the last one because that's the most important. And
okay.
I know we could talk to you for a long time, but I guess what I wanted to, one of the things that I think probably people are interested, I mean, all, I think they're all interesting, hopefully, but one of the things I'm interested in, I hope, I assume other people would be interested is the archive. And do you ever acquire archives these days? Do you acquire, you know, just individual photographs? Do you purchase? Do you take donations? And how is that, you know, what's the process for making that happen?
Right. So we do purchase works, and we accept gifts or donations. Everything that we acquire has to be approved, no matter how it's acquired, whether it's gift or purchase. Has to be approved by the Photography Collections Committee of the Board, which meets quarterly. And every thing that goes into the collection has to have a written proposal in advance that is distributed to the members. And then we present it, the curators present it during the committee meeting. So it's a long process, or not, you know, it doesn't take years, but it we can't like say yes and it suddenly it's in the collection. We have to get approval. In terms of archives, we do occasionally take archives. We recently were given David Leventhal's photographic archive, and that was the basis for the exhibition that Mary mentioned during her intro. But we have to be extremely selective with it because of resources. So, and all kinds of resources, not just money, but space and time. We feel that if we take an archive, that's a responsibility to treat it well, catalog everything, photograph it, digitize it, and make it accessible to the public. Make it accessible to the public so that it doesn't just sit around. Like the point of having an archive is so that people know what's in it and can have the benefit of exploring it. So In order to do right, you know, right by the archive, we have to be limited in how many of them we take. But we do; it is a possibility. We just we can't take 100. We have to, you know, be really careful. And and just like anything else, I have to have my committee agree and the board agree.
Is it fair to say how many photos you have, and do you have negatives as well?
So we have about 400,000 photographic objects in the collection. This includes negatives and transparencies. We don't actively collect negatives and transparencies anymore unless they're part of an archive. They're part of an archive, then of course, that would be important material to have, but we wouldn't collect just a one-off negative.
And do you ask for copyright? There's no reason to, for the archives, do you ask for copyright, or you're not interested in necessarily the copyright, or what's?
So in the case of Coburn, it can be bequeathed. It's not absolutely necessary. We don't have copyright to David Leventhal, so to those materials. We have permission from him to use those images of those objects in our educational materials, or, you know, to promote an exhibition of his work. So in other words, for non-commercial purposes. But if anybody wants to reproduce that work, or, you know, use it in an ad or on a book cover or whatever, they need permission from him. They might get the file from us, which we have a whole rights and reproductions process, and we don't release that until they can show that they've gotten permission from the rights holder. And then we release it. So it depends. We don't have to get copyright if we take the archive. But there are some that we do have copyright for. So like Mimi Marai is the copyright holder for Nicholas Marai. And what I just described as the process of people having to, show that they have permission from the rights holder before we release the files. That's how it works with her. With Hein, there's not a copyright holder, so it's sort of on us to protect the legacy of the photographer. So we take that as kind of seriously. Right. I don't know if that's right. An oxymoron, but yeah.
I know when I was there, I mean, I assume, I don't know if you call it a research library or it, I remember that you could look down through the glass and see the people in the library. And is it a place that's really open and available for use? Could you just talk a little bit about that? Because I think one of the concerns people have is what you had alluded to earlier, which is not wanting to give it somewhere and then just having it sit and never be seen. But I know Eastman House is certainly known around the world for, you know, the importance and the archive and the history and everything. So can you just talk about what kind of access people have and who uses it?
So you can, if you go to our website and go to collection search, you can look at at our collections database or a version of it that is online that has records for everything in the collection, most everything in the collection. There's some things that are still being prepared to be up there. So you'll find a record for everything, but you may not find an image, because that's an awful lot of things for us to digitize, and we're working our way through it. So you may be on there 1 week and it doesn't have an image, and the next week one pops up. And that means that our photographer has gotten to it in the meantime. So you can look online. In person, post-pandemic, you can come visit, and you would make an appointment with our collection manager, Ross Knapper, who's email, I think, is on the web. Well, I know it's on the website. It's photostudycenter@eastman.org. You can make an appointment with him. If you know what you want to see, that's great. He can make it available. If you know the types of things, but not the exact things, he can work with you to identify the exact objects. So you can come see the collection, and where I think it's right now it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, from 10 to 4. It's open, and it's closed for from 12 to 1 for lunch. And the library, so our rare books related to photography and cinema, and of course some of those have photographs in them, especially 19th century stuff. The library is also open by appointment, and you can email or call the librarian to make an appointment there, and that information's all on the website as well.
Great. Another thing, I'm going to ask just one or two more, and then we'll let Sean get in, and then we'll definitely open this up because for everyone's questions. But one of the things I guess people would be interested in, and I'm interested in knowing, is how do you go about setting up shows, and where do you look for photographers, or do you, you know, is it, so we want to know, is it social media, is it galleries, is it group shows, museums, everything? Do you just keep abreast of everything, and then certain things appeal to you for certain reasons, or just the process behind it is interesting? Yeah.
So all of those things I try to keep in touch, but of course that is more than a 24 hour a day thing if I was to try to do it all. But I used to go to New York pretty regularly, and hopefully I can start doing that again. So I travel to see exhibitions. Perifoto, I always go to. So art fairs, I look at magazines. I occasionally look at social media. That's more of a timing and not a time availability thing, and not a choice or a principle. It's just about how much time there is in a day. As far as exhibitions, there's me and two associate curators and a curatorial assistant. Mm. And we organize shows based on our areas of expertise and interest. And we also work with other curators at other institutions on exhibitions. And I'll say that the model that seems most successful now for getting an exhibition at more than one institution is to collaborate, for the institutions and curators to collaborate on its production. So the institution can share organizational expenses, curators can work together, and you usually, if it's a good collaboration, it usually ends up being a better product in the end, because you benefit from pushing each other and asking each other's questions and such like that. But also the financial benefits are huge for each of the institutions. So the great collaboration model sort of works better right now than the make a show and try to find places for it to go. But we work about 2 or 3 years in advance on our exhibition schedule. Right now, we have exhibitions on the calendar until 2024. And in terms of trying to keep up with contemporary work for, I should have said, we have three galleries. We have the main exhibition galleries, which are the largest sort of space for scholarly projects, or if not scholarly, like thematic or monographic exhibitions. Those are the shows in there are the most likely to have a corresponding publication, etc. They're the sort of big loan shows. Then we have a project gallery, which is it's meant to introduce new work by a working photographer. And then we have the History of Photography Gallery. And that's our permanent collection gallery. So we always have a show in there that's basically roughly chronological, but gives a sense of the history of the medium. So it's from all eras of the medium's history, but we don't present it as like a comprehensive telling of the story, more like a slice through it. And a different curator in the photography department is responsible for organizing the photographs in that selection on a rotating basis. The cameras are selected by the technology curator. So for the project gallery, that's mostly contemporary, as I said, living photographers. And so to keep up on that, I do a lot of looking and reading and meeting and portfolio reviews and, you know, get connected with people and through other curators, through other artists, through meetings like this, etc. So right. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, most definitely. That's really great. And I forgot, do you do have to jump off at 1 or before 1?
Because otherwise, a tad before 1. So
what we'll do, I'm going to actually change what I said I was going to do. I think we should take questions for you now, and then we'll do Sean after, if that's okay. Sean, I can't see you, Sean, but is that okay with you? Are you okay on time?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. Sorry, Sean. Yeah, great. Thank you. So, Julie, can you help facilitate questions for Lisa? We'll take like 3 or 4 questions now, and then we'll do Sean's presentation and questions right after. Thank you so much.
Sure.
John Gartenberg had a particular question about whether there's any particular kind of imagery that you guys are interested in collecting these days. So for contemporary photography, 1950s on, do you have any specific needs?
Well, that's a very good question. And if you ask me, I'll be able to answer it better in around November. And I'll tell you why, because we're doing the first ever collection review of the museum's collection, which 400,000 objects, that takes a while. But we're coming to the end. And the point is to review the strengths and weaknesses in all of the areas and identify the gaps and then prioritize them with our committee in terms of where we're going to put our acquisition funds first and where there's going to be cases where you missed that on the market. And so you'll try to, work with collectors and find out how you might be able to fill those gaps. So, the answer is I don't have specific things right now to tell you, but I will very soon because we're almost done writing that up and working with our committee on what our priorities will be.
Thanks for that answer.
Are you willing to share your contact information, Lisa? Would you like us to wait? Okay, so if you're
sure, I can share it.
Okay, that would be marvelous. If I we can either send it to everybody after, or we can just pop it in here in the chat window if you're willing to put your email address in there. That would be great.
Oh, sure. Here.
Juliet Cumming had a question. There's some of her archives imagery and moving images at the museum. She'd like to know which museums you like to collaborate with.
I'm open to curating with any museums, but I've worked well with April Watson at the Nelson Atkins Museum. We did the Eugene Richards project, and I really enjoyed that collaboration. Our institutions also worked well together. I'm right now working with Casey Riley at the Minneapolis Institute of Art and Frank Goodyear at the Bowdoin College Museum of Art on a Marcia Resnick retrospective. That'll be presented it'll open in Maine in 2022 and then come to Rochester in 2023. So Oh, I just noticed I only sent my email to Grayson.
Yeah, that's a bit annoying. You have to re-choose everyone.
I have to change it.
Yeah. Someone's asking, I said there's a few JGs on the call today. So there's a mysterious JG. I'm not sure which one. What is the square footage of the three galleries?
Good question. I was going to try to estimate from memory, but I happen to have a piece of paper right here so that I know exactly. So the special exhibitions galleries, the total runs to about 4,500 square feet, or 4,543 to be exact. The project gallery is 900 square feet. And the history of photography gallery is 1,050 square feet. Now, I should say the linear feet might be more useful because there are movable walls in there. So the square footage doesn't necessarily give you a sense of how much wall space there is. But I would say the total linear feet that I have here for the main galleries is 579 linear feet. And then I need my reading glass. 93 feet for a history of photography in terms of linear feet, and then 169 linear feet for the project gallery.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's it for questions for Lisa. Lisa's very kindly put her email address here in the chat window, so you should copy and paste it now, or remember to save the chat, or check in with me and Mary after if you fail at the above. We should let you go, Lisa. It's nearly 10 to 1. We should let Sean come on.
Okay, thanks.
Great.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, are you going to introduce Ms.
Coulson? Yes, I sure am. Sean Corcoran, who hopefully some of you met when we did our archive tour several years ago, was amazing. Sean has also participated in the seminar in the past, and he's definitely a friend of APAG. He has a current show up that includes, I don't know how many members, but definitely several, because there were a bunch of us at the opening, which we were lucky to go to in January, if I'm not mistaken. Was that? Yes, Julie's nodding her head. But his official bio is as follows. Sean Corcoran has served as the curator of prints and photographs at the Museum of City of New York since 2007. He previously served as assistant curator of photographs at the George Eastman Museum in Rochester, which is a coincidence. I didn't know that, but it's a nice combo to have them both here today, having worked at the same museum. His exhibitions have included City as Canvas, graffiti art from the Martin Wong collection, Through a Different Lens, Stanley Kubrick photographs, and The City Within, Brooklyn photographs by Alex Webb and Rebecca Norris Webb. He has written extensively on photography, including essays for Elliot Erwitt, At Home and Around the World, I See a City, Todd Webb's New York, Alexei Titarenko, The City is a Novel, and several other publications. So let's give a big APAG welcome to Sean. If you need me to ask any of the questions, I will do that, but I gave them to you so we can do the same thing as Lisa, whatever you're comfortable with. So I turn it over to Sean.
Okay.
Thank you again for being here. Yep. Sure,
of course, and I have the questions here. But I'll start with a little bit about the museum, just like Lisa did as well, and then work my way through. But I do have my chat covered, so if people want to ask a question, use their mic. Okay, so the museum, the City of New York, was founded in 1923. We're actually coming up on our centennial in a few years. And the first major acquisitions of photography came in around 1928-29. The collection, so we've been collecting photographs for a very, very long time. Of course, our mission and goals are a bit different than a place like the George Eastman Museum, in that we are a museum that is dedicated to the city of New York, not to a particular medium or art, like, or art form, let's say, be it cinema or still photography. So we are collecting specifically relating around New York City, New York's five boroughs. And that is the driver of our collecting and our exhibitions. The size of the collection is actually comparable to the Eastman House. You see, I come from Eastman House days. Right. comparable to the Eastman Museum in that we have about 400,000 photographs. I would say maybe 150 to 200,000 are negatives, in that we have, one of our major collections is the Look magazine archives. We have the Look magazine material relating to New York City. The Smithsonian has the non-New York assignments. Over the years, I should also say our first curator dedicated to photography was hired in 1929. Her name was Grace Mayer. Some of you may know her, as she went on later to work at MoMA under Steichen and later with Sarkowski. She was the curator at the museum from about 1929 to about 1958, I think it was. And she was responsible for a large number of the archives and collections that we're well known for. She was responsible for our collecting Jacob Riis's extant archive, Bernice Abbott's Changing New York archive, several commercial and architectural photographers, including the Byron Company and the Wirtz Brothers architectural firm, and several others, which I'm not going to bother going listing them all. But even as you can kind of tell from those brief ones that I listed, we are interested in primarily documentary photography of the world, photography of the ways people live. But of course, we love it if it's artistic. So we balance the content information and the qualitative content of the photographs when we are collecting about New York's five boroughs. So we've been collecting and exhibiting photography since about 1929. One major component of not just the photography collection, but of the museum's collection is theater related. So we have probably about 80,000 photographs related to the theater, Broadway, the stage, the performing arts to some extent. And when it comes to the way in which we collect, over the years, that has been very driven by donations. And let's say the last 20 or 30 years, there's been more acquisitions, although our funds are always pretty limited because we don't have an endowment for acquisitions. So it's dependent on the financial situation of the museum at the time and how much they can dedicate to acquisitions. The process in which we acquire things is much like Lisa explained for the Eastman Museum. There's a process in which, I vet things, I share them internally to the senior staff at the museum, and then we share them all with a committee, a trustees committee. We're in the middle of changing that, so it's a little more streamlined. Based on what more and more art museums are doing today, we even though we're not strictly an art museum, we kind of convinced them that given the value of photography these days and some of the other media we collect, that it's easier if there is a process in which, say, a couple photographs come in, but their value is under, I think it's $5,000. We don't have to wait until our quarterly meeting to get approval. We can internally with the director, we can approve the donation and then we report on it at the quarterly meeting. And then once it's a larger gift, you know, over a certain amount, then everything can still be approved by the committee. And that's partially because, you know, the trustees have the fiduciary responsibility. So if some very expensive things are coming in and they're going to be responsible for its care in perpetuity, then they of course should have more of a way in. So as I kind of alluded to it, we have I think it's slightly more than quarterly. I think we have 5 meetings with our committee for acquisitions and collections care a year, and that is kind of when our usual formal process for acquiring comes in. We rarely take complete archives at this point, but partially it's because our mission is so specific. There are very few photographers who spend their entire lives only photographing New York City. For that alone, you know, we would probably eliminate most archives. And what ends up happening is we end up taking work from a specific series from a photographer or a certain body of work. If they're trying to place archives, their material in archives somewhere, you know, what we end up doing is saying, we can't take it all because we can't take your work in Paris or in Albuquerque, but we are really interested in the work that you were doing in New York over this period of time. And we would love to, you know, be the repository for that materials. In some cases, we don't typically take negatives. We consider ourselves an exhibiting institution. So the things we take in, we want to be able to exhibit. However, if it's under certain circumstances, if it is an archive of a specific project, we would consider it much more than we would otherwise. So that said, you know, over the last, I've been there 13 years, and we've taken, you know, project archives, you know, maybe a dozen times. It also depends on the scope of the project and how much material you're talking. I'm also thinking based on some of the things Lisa said. If we are taking a project archive and we're taking the negatives, we have to have reproduction rights. Otherwise, what's the point of having the negatives? We rarely ask for copyright outright. And again, that would only be in rare circumstances where we're taking everything. And usually even when we ask for copyright, as I say flatly, it could be non-exclusive. So for instance, one group we took in actually within the last 2 years is work by a living photographer, Harvey Wang, who's a Lower East Side photographer. He's also a documentary filmmaker. So some of you may know him. He did a documentary film about the transition to digital photography. There's a book with it and everything. Anyways, he wanted us, we didn't even ask him. He gave us about 700 prints, and he's actually making more prints for us as he finds them. But he actually said, you know, we typically ask for non-commercial rights. Like, we want to be able to, if we exhibit the picture, we want to be able to put it in the ad for the exhibition or in the catalog for the book. That's the type of non-commercial use we typically ask for. And some of you we've acquired work from in recent years, and we send a form out with the, you know, if we are paying for it or taking a donation, regardless if we're working with the copyright holder, we have a form that we send, which has a laundry list of every kind of right. And it's completely up to you what you choose to allow to the museum. Everything from, you know, we actually won't put it on our collections portal page unless you give us permission to do it. So it's everything from what some people might argue is fair use. We try to be as like by the book and make sure we have as much laid out permission as possible. So it could be to put on our website, to put on our a brochure that we give away explaining a gallery or the museum, or it could be a scholarly publication. And we separate them so you can tell. And then there are commercial uses, and everything from, you know, the museum can license it on a mug to everything needs to be sent to me for permission. And in fact, that's what I typically tell people to put is always, you know, always say if there's a commercial or third party use that it's directed to you or the estate or whatever. And because we're not in the business, frankly, of trying to license for commercial purposes. Yeah, I'm kind of meandering a bit here, but I'll keep going.
That's right. Sean, I was just going to say, I think one of your forms is on our website already.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you where it is. Yeah. Okay. I think it's not under resources, but yeah, I'll let people know where it is. You have some of the best forms. Very clear, very easy to understand. You're easy to work with, and not to interrupt, but you know,
it's been for us. It's been when I started at the museum in around 2007, you know, we were in a process of renovating the building, building a new archive space. I didn't even get to that. Around 12, 14 years ago, the museum began a complete renovation. We built a new archive facility. We were previously had middling archive storage facility, and some of you came on the site visit, and we basically did leaps and bounds over the rest of the institutions in the city. I feel proud in saying that. And you know, we're one of only two institutions that have cold storage for specifically for photography, actually. And when we committed to doing that work, we also committed to a better formalization and professionalization of our intellectual control and care of the collections. And so when we moved the collection into the new facility, we rehoused everything. We cataloged, I would say we're at about the Look collection is the outlier because it's just so many negatives. It's really difficult, but if you take out the Look collection, we've cataloged about 80 to 90% of the collection at this point, and have put probably, I'd say 60% of the photography collection has been digitized and is online. And if you go to the museum's collections portal, you can see there are well over 200,000 objects on there.
And do you want to show the site at all, Sean?
If you want to, or maybe you could just flash it up for a second. But if you go to the museum's webpage, mcny.org, and you go to collections. This is the exhibition that is up
currently. Okay, sorry. Yeah,
that's okay. Yeah, so this is our collections portal, which on its landing page has like some a selection of kind of either collections that have been recently digitized or highlights that we want people to look at. But then of course at the top there are there's a simple search and an advanced search where you can kind of do a bit more in depth by finding, you know, searching by photographer, searching by years within brackets, say, you know, 1900 to 1930 or that kind of thing. you can search by streets. I'll tell you this because we get a lot of people, you know, renovating their homes and stuff like that, and they want to see if we have pictures. Don't search by street addresses because you're not going to get much. You're going to do much better by searching by streets or areas or boroughs, those kinds of things. But it's, you know, there's, like I said, over 200,000 images there. Some materials from other collections, as maybe you'll even see as you scroll around. So it's our ongoing work to, like, you know, we have quite a backlog, but every new acquisition that comes in is supposed to be digitized and posted on the site once, you know, assuming approval has been given by the copyright holder. And so we spent, you know, a good several years just working on rehousing, moving, cataloging, digitizing the collection. And in that, when we got to the end, that endpoint, we actually did what Lisa said she was doing now. We did a broad survey of the collection, looked really closely at what we have, where are our weaknesses, what do we need to be collecting for the future? And the broad strokes answer is, we're very strong from about 1880 to about 1950. We have early photography. Some of it's really important, but it's not, you know, there are certainly holes, but it's also very rare material. Now, in our strengths, in our area of strength of 1850, there are, until recently, there were some very glaring holes, but we haven't even done the press release yet, but we just received a very important donation of more than 600 photographs, which are alleviating some of our most important omissions in the collection. And then what we really found is that from about 1960 on, when photography became a collectible market or an art collecting market, and our lack of funds over the years that's where our holes have really kind of become noticeable. So we, meaning me, with the approval of the committee and committee of trustees and the administration, have focused our collecting activities on materials from 1960 to today. If we're to spend money, it's most likely to be spent on materials made in those timeframes. And then we also realized we are pretty well set. Well, you can always use more, but we are pretty strong in architectural photography. But what we really want to be collecting is the life of New York citizens, of the ways in which people live in the city. So ideally in public spaces, but that's not our only, you know, we want to know how people live at home as well. So yeah, the Art Students League ball is very, very entertaining. So that's where our focus on collecting is, but that, again, you know, we certainly collect work from the 30s. If it speaks to maybe a neighborhood we don't have good documentation of, or just some aspect of city life that's not really well documented or represented in the collection. So we have a pretty good sense these days of what we're looking for contemporary photography, but also for more historic photography as well. And like I said, if it's before 1960, we're a bit more picky, but still, you know, we're as opportunistic as always when we see, you know, some good material out there. Let me see what I can, let's see. I'm gonna look at your questions here quick. How far in advance do we work on shows? Well, in that regard, I'll also say something about our gallery spaces. We have three what we call mid-size changing exhibition spaces, and those are about approximately 1,800 to 2,200 square feet. Yeah, that's right, square feet. So, for instance, you know, the one of these shows in this gallery is the Collecting New York Stories. If you want to pull that page up now, and that is an exhibition of primarily photography. There's a small side gallery that has, you know, other ephemera and things like that. But that gallery has I think 120 photographs that were collected over the last 3 or 4 years in it. Now, we, again, our collection is primarily historic, so prints larger than 20 by 24 are rare for us. You know, with the contemporary market, there are many more larger pictures, but we tend to be, you know, pictures, 16 by 20 is a great size for us. We're very happy with that. And so in this gallery, I would say there are a few oversized prints, like 40 by 60s, but for the most part, they're probably around 16 by 20 or smaller. And this exhibition is, as it says right in the title, Collecting New York Stories. These are all new acquisitions that were acquired within the last 3 to 4 years. And the focus was really on how New Yorkers live and what the experience is like on the streets of the city. I don't say we collect street photography because that has a kind of a genre connotation, but we are interested in street life. That is definitely a focus for us, but not the only area in which we are collecting. So there are three galleries about that size, and then we have two other smaller changing spaces, which are about 900 to 1,200 square feet. And then there are several permanent galleries. The ground floor galleries deal with the history of New York City from, you know, the Dutch colonial period to today. And we have photography mixed into, you know, the later centuries, of course, when photography is around. And then we have the activist gallery. So one of the areas we are very heavily collecting are political social activism in New York City over the last couple hundred years. The smaller galleries, the larger galleries, we tend to work on 2 to 3 years in advance. The smaller galleries, we try to be a little more nimble with and opportunistic. Although, you know, we have a list of shows for those spaces, and that we know will eventually be put into place. Yet we are also sometimes will push them off, because we can be nimble enough to, you know, put a small show of 30 prints together because it speaks to the moment. So that is one of our things, is we try to be a museum that is also of the present for New Yorkers. Let's see. I think another question was. Yeah. Go ahead, Mary. You wanna?
No, I was gonna say, I think you're covering everything. What was I wanted to also open it up to questions, but what sure. were you gonna broach though?
No. I was just gonna say that in the future we're discussing the idea of having one space specifically and regularly for photography, but currently all the spaces are up for grabs by all the curators, and we are continually pitching ideas, and I may have a show in one gallery on the third floor 1 year, and then I might be on the second floor in a smaller gallery. So it's constantly changing depending on what the ideas are, what the space dictates. And then we try to think about what shows are going to be up at the same time, but we tend not to do like a year of this or a year of that. And we just find that kind of makes it a bit more interesting and eclectic for our visitors. So you could have a show on, a more design or public urban planning type show. And then at the same time, it could be a show on Stephen Burrows, who's a fashion designer and from our costume collection, or it could be like a show that's up right now of Alex and Becky Webb's photographs of Brooklyn. And so they don't always like fit together based on a theme. It's more about, being opportunistic and giving the visitor an eclectic look at life in the city.
We've Great. Got just a few more minutes, Mary, sorry.
I was going to say that there's a couple questions that are relevant. One is, how do you, what's the best way for you to see work?
At the museum?
Yeah, at the museum. I mean, for a photographer, what's the process for somebody to show you their work or?
Oh, sure. This is what I typically do. Like most curators, I have a limited amount of time, and for working photographers, maybe more than archives or estates. But typically, I'm very open to anybody approaching me. It's easy, usually like. I'll look at everything in some capacity. If I have never heard of your work and don't know anything about it, I typically start with send me a web page or some examples of the work. So that's just a screen for me to kind of know that we're not wasting each other's time. Something like I'm trying to think if it's not even New York City or something like that. And then I can just say, yeah, this work's not right for us. But typically I'll look through some images and or a website. And then if it seems like it's worth having a conversation, then I'll either, if they're local, we'll set up a meet. And if they're local and they have an archive, they want me to look at a lot of prints, I can go to them. In some cases, they may just want to bring a portfolio of 30 pictures or something like that, then we could do it at the museum. But I try to have a pretty open door policy. I try to look at everything that's sent along. I feel like if it's about New York City, I should know about it and be open to it because that's my subject. And I have to know as much as possible about what's out there and what's been made and what's being made. Email or, if you want, can share my email address. That's fine. But that's probably the easiest way. I will tell you, if you try to call me, it's going to be the hardest way to get a hold of me because I don't use the phone. that's my one slice of honesty because I'm not in my office very much. I'm in the galleries and I'm working in the archive. And email is just, I'm much more mobile, so email is really much easier for me.
Great. One thing also that you mentioned to me is, and somebody asked, how is COVID affecting everything? Sure. And if you have any comments on the museum world.
I've been to the museum once in the last 3 months. I've been working remotely for a while. I should say that in that time we did have an acquisition meeting and brought in new work into the collection. But our next meeting is in September, and because I haven't been able to meet with people and actually gather physical objects, it'll probably be a very light meeting. So, you know, I'm still doing the day-to-day correspondence and planning on, I'm doing research and planning on exhibitions. For that part, you know, like I'm working on a show that is subject-driven and requires finding objects from photographers and archives and, you know, special collections, and not being able to go out and gather that stuff up is really kind of hindering the process, but I'm working on it in ways that I can at this point. But we don't know exactly when we're reopening to the museum, to the public yet. We're only just starting about talking about spending more regular time at the museum. You know, while we were closed, we've had a collections person. We've had security, build facilities manager, making sure that all the temperature and humidity and climate control things are going as they should. And we've had one person from collections kind of monitoring all the objects hanging in the dark and in the archives. And the one time I did go to the museum was when it was my turn to be the person to walk through everything. There's been a total of, I think, less than a dozen people who've been in the museum in the last 3 months.
All right. I'm gonna give you the last question and then we're gonna move on to our breakout rooms.
Sorry, okay.
Which is folding in two people, I guess, together. Do you actually ever curate any exhibitions for work that you're not planning to acquire, or can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. We actually do that. We actually do that pretty regularly. We have this large collection, but all of our shows are not based on or exclusively drawn from our collections. There are several. So, for instance, the Alex and Becky Webb show. All that material coming in is not in our collection. Some of it will stay with us, frankly, when it's done. But that is not a prerequisite. The Todd Webb show, sometimes it's the show leads to a donation from an archive or a collector, and sometimes that is the motivation for doing a show. Frankly, is because we want the materials, and by showing a commitment and interest in our interest in the work, it's a way of sometimes convincing people that they should donate things to the museum. And in other cases, you know, we do shows that are not strictly photography shows, but for instance, the basketball show that's up right now, there's an avidon of Lou Alcindor that will not be staying with us, as much as I might like it to when the show is over. It's a, you know, it's a loan from the Avidon Foundation. And there's another one from the Jeffrey Biddle studio. So that will probably go back there. So, but then there are pictures like one of Jeanette Beckman's pictures is in there, and that's part of our archive. We use things from the archive, but we fully expect to be bringing materials in from the outside that we know are not going to be staying with us. If it helps us tell the story we want and a lender is willing to have us have it on display, that's all we care about. Any other questions? I'm trying to be brief now because
Brilliant, Sean. Thank you so much. And Cynthia's waving. Can you keep it brief?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. Do they have a library? Do they have books on photography? Do they have a library available to the public at all?
No. We made the decision. We have a department library, meaning like there is a photographic books library, but it's really an internal library. It's not intended to be a public library. And the decision was made there actually maybe 8 years ago. To not have a formal, because there are already so many other libraries in the city that do it better than what we could possibly do, between the public library, the ICP library, several university libraries. They've already have libraries built, and we have reciprocal loan agreements with them. So should we need to exhibit a book as part of the show? So we just decided, you know, as an institution with limited space, it doesn't make any sense to do that. Now, if somebody comes in to do research on, say, Bernice Abbott, who we have a lot of material, and they need to see and we have a book about her that they need to see, of course we'll share it with them. But we don't have a catalog system that is publicly searchable, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
Sure.
Great. Thank you, Sean. I think we're going to.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mary's put Sean's email address in the chat window. We can share that separately as well if necessary. Don't all drive him crazy.
Well, no, please send me a message. Okay?
Drive him crazy. You hear that? I get the power to do the breakout room. So we're down to about 67 people. Thank you, Sean. Right,
thank you again.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah.
Anyone that's going to say?
Does it make sense, Julie?
What?
The breakout, you're doing it, okay.
Yeah, I just can't see how to allocate anybody into any particular room. So it's going to be 8 people random. In the room. We're going to trust you to go around your room and introduce yourselves. If anyone's got any particular photography or archive related questions, you should just talk amongst yourselves. 15 minutes.